images. This is a photograph of a garden taken in Zarqapatia.
That's a photograph in Morodu, Zarqapatia.
But it could be anywhere in the Carpathians. And one of the first things I notice is an Appalachian, or someone from Appalachia. Is cucurruzza, maize, beans, corn, beans, and bean poles. We do this in Appalachia too, exactly. And there's a reason that you guys here, the Ukrainians, are, and the Carpathians, are eating these foods. Next image. In 1972, a watershed book was published in America that talks about this very issue. It was written by a historian who has now retired, but was teaching at the University of Texas at Austin. When the book was first published, it didn't cause quite a stir among academics. But in 1992, when America celebrated the 400-year anniversary of the discovery of America by Columbus, people reread this book and said, we missed something here. Alfred Crosby's thesis basically is that Western history would not have evolved the way it did without the Columbian Exchange. And what he means by that, without the exchange of both foods and diseases across the continents. Western civilization, Europe and America, would not have evolved the way it did without this exchange of foods and diseases. So starting in the early 1500s, all the ships from Spain and Italy and Holland that arrive bring with them certain European foods. Prior to the 16th century, America had no honeybees. Prior to the 16th century, America had no wheat. No rice. No oats. No apples. Pears. We also had no cows or horses or sheep or pigs. But we also had none of the diseases, none of our Native Americans had ever experienced any of the diseases that were common in Europe at the time. For example, smallpox. Influenza. Malaria.
Malaria.
Right. The first two, smallpox and influenza, were especially harmful to the Cherokee Indians. In fact, those two illnesses alone exterminated 90% of the entire Cherokee population within 50 years. So that made it very easy for Europeans to colonize North America, especially when they're bringing their own livestock and foodstuffs with them. In fact, in the manure of the cows and horses were little seeds from all of your forest and all of your fields. So today in Appalachia we have 300 species of European plants in our forest and fields. At the same time, North America gave Europe a lot of things that you did not have prior to the 16th century. Pardon me for saying this, but you had no sunflowers. You had no pumpkins. You had no tomatoes. You had no potatoes. You had no corn. Hungarians really don't like me to say this, but there were no peppers in Hungary prior to the 16th century. And you also had no turkeys. In fact, what is the Ukrainian word for turkey? And where does that come from? The Indians, the Indies, right? That's a North American word. So Alfred Crosby is saying that political and social forces are important, but these environmental and ecological forces are as important in understanding human evolution and human nature relationships. So you could argue that one of the reasons why the Carpathians has a similar subsistence culture is because of the Columbian Exchange. It's still warm enough here in Western Ukraine for things like corn to grow, whereas in England corn isn't grown because it's too cold. Next image. To show just how important the Columbian Exchange is to your own subsistence culture, back in 2005, the Canadian Department of Agriculture and the Ukrainian Department of Agriculture got together and they did a survey of all the bean species grown in Zakarpattia. They found 109 bean species, all of which are from America. And just this one village alone, Isiria, I think that's how you pronounce it,
Isiria,
these bean species were found in one village. And one of these has the DNA, it's an exact DNA match of a bean species from Lima, Peru. Next image. And I myself, folks, in shopping in the Rinuk in Ivano-Frankivsk, discovered this bean. I bought it, I cooked it, it was one of the most wonderful meals I've had here in Ukraine. This is a Mexican bean directly from southern Mexico, known as the Oyotote Morando, Morando bean. We have it in Appalachia as well. Next image. We also, or you also brought things to us. So in Appalachia, one of our most popular apples is the Alexander from Tsar Alexander.
Є також речі, які ми маємо від вас. Одне з найвідоміших яблук в Палатах – це Олександр, так званий, на честь царя.
You call it Апорта.
А вас називається
Апорта. Huge, large apple.
Таке величезне яблуко.
I've also bought Апорта apples in the market in Ivano-Франківськ.
Також на базарі Івано-Франківську.
Next image. Of course, one thing that makes Appalachia and the Carpathians similar is that Appalachia maintains European traditions, let's call them, much longer than the rest of America did, because Appalachia was rural and remote and isolated from modern cities. People living in Appalachia were able to maintain these old European traditions.
Було значно довше збережено європейські традиції, розвинені європейські традиції.
a lot of my colleagues in Appalachian Studies, the field of Appalachian Studies, don't like me to say this.
Дуже багато моїх колег, які займаються Апалачами, не люблять, коли я це говорю.
They somehow think that Appalachia is sort of an ethnic identity all of its own.
Вони вважають, що хотіло думати, що Апалачі це така етнічна, абсолютно окремішня етнічна ідентичність.
But I argue what makes Appalachianness or what makes people of Appalachia unique is they were able to maintain their Europeanness.
Я ж кажу, що вирізняє населення Апалачів саме те, що вони змогли зберегти свою європейськість.
For example, this person was weaving up until the 1930s and 1940s.
Ця особа, яку ми бачимо на слайді, займалася прибильництвом до 30-40-х років 20-го століття.
But where did that loom come from?
Але звідки цей станок?
Came from Europe.
З Європи.
The design, maybe even the physical wood itself was brought from Europe.
Безперечно, що будовець, основно, там здобувалося саме дерево.
So weaving in Appalachia is not an Appalachian tradition, it's a European tradition. Next image. Making our own distilled spirits. It's still being done in Appalachia today. In fact, the number one Appalachian export in the world, it's known around the world, is Jack
Daniels.
But when it was originally made, it was made in a very small village in a community using traditional methods. But this design, this distillery, this exact design, it's European. To prove it, next image. I took this photo 2 weeks ago. In Brev Maramorish, not more than 10 kilometers from the Ukrainian border. And the method is exactly the same method of making whiskey in Appalachia. Next image. In Appalachia, we even celebrated Old Christmas, just like you did here in Ukraine. In fact, England didn't adopt the Gregorian calendar until
1752.
But in Appalachia, we continued following the Gregorian calendar up until the
1800s.
And I'm telling you the truth, up until the 1930s, we celebrated Old Christmas even in the large towns of
Appalachia.
On January 6th. And in many villages in Appalachia, they still practice things like, I think you call them vertep, malanka. Well, in many villages in Appalachia, we practice those traditions up until the 1930s.
Дуже багато селах Апалача до 30-х років практикувалися ті традиції, подібні до ваших, які ви називаєте вертеп чи маланка.
But the German version of vertep, which is called Belsnickling,
німецька версія власне вертеп називається Belsnickel,
is still practiced in West Virginia today.
У Західній Вірджинії досі практикується сьогодні.
Today.
Сьогодні. В наш час.
Next day. This is a very similar Christmas play, vertep play, being performed in Maramureș, Romania. And the characters, cop, person, were also used in Appalachia up until the 1930s.
Дуже подібна ось така різдвяна вистава, яка відбувається в Румунії, і такі ж персонажі застосовувалися в Appalachia.
I took this photograph in 2012.
Ця фотографія походить з 2012 року.
Next image, please. Of course, you could argue that the real sort of a missing link, you might say, between Appalachia and the Carpathians is the immigration that occurred from the Carpathians to Appalachia. And even in Appalachia, there's not many scholars who really know and understand this immigration that occurred from 1870 until 1920.
Китай палата немає багато науковців, які розуміють, тобто знають, розуміють цю міграцію і цю культурну міграцію, яка відбувалася з Карпатом Палачі між 1850-х і 1950-х роками.
There's only been two books that have focused on this issue, and both of these books are not really done by scholars.
Наразі лише дві книги присвячені цьому питанню, і жодну з них не написав науковець.
There's one noted scholar, historian, by the name of Walter Wozecki.
Вже є видатний історик на ім'я Walter Wozecki чи Wozecki.
And he found that as late as 1933 there were 700,000 Ruthenians living in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky.
І він встановив, що навіть ще у 1933 рік у Західній Вірджинії, Пенсильванії, Кентакі мешкало до 700 тисяч Ruthenians.
Next image. In fact, here's the reason why. The Anthracite coal region Slavic community. So between 1870 and 1920, we had coal mines in Appalachia that needed to be mined, and we needed cheap labor. And most of the cheap labor came from western Ukraine.
Фактично чому? Тому що була будівельні шахти в Апалачі, будівельна промисловість в той час, від власне кінець 19-го століття, і була потрібна дешева робоча сила, велика частина якої походила.
The first wave in the 1870s was largely single men from Закарпаття.
Перша хвиля еміграції власне у 1870-х роках це були значною мірою неодружені жінки з Закарпаття.
But by 1910, you had more and more individuals from the Pre-Carpathians coming to Appalachia as well. In 1910, there were 140 Greek Catholic churches in the Appalachians. Next image. Not only did you have Ukrainians coming to America, you also had the Jewish population from the Carpathians also coming to America.
І до Америки приїжджали не тільки українці з Карпат, також було єврейське населення Карпат також приїжджало в Апалачі.
In some of the coal mining communities, there was many as 200 Jewish people from the Carpathians living in these coal field camps.
Деякі з цих таборів, шахтах, жили на 200 євреїв.
Enough to even have Jewish synagogues in these small coal mine communities.
Достатньо тільки, щоб навіть в цих невеличких спільнотах, шахтах мати власну синагогу.
This is one fairly scholarly book done by historian Deborah Weiner, who looks at the immigration of Jewish immigrants from the Carpathians to Kentucky and West Virginia.
Перед вами один Деборі Вайнер, написала про імміграцію євреїв з Карпат до Апалачі.
Next image. Of course, what happened to all these Ruthenians, Galicians, Rusins? What happened to them?
Ну, що сталося з цими цими Русинами?
Well, part of what happened to them is, well, it's a variety of things. One, they came back.
Несколько речей сталося. Початково вони повернулися.
Two, because they're working in a very dangerous job and very hazardous job, they were injured or killed in the coal mines.
Частково, оскільки вони працюють на дуже ризиковані роботі, то вони постраждали або навіть загинули у шахтах.
Because the 1930s was the Great Depression, well, I'll shift back up, the 1920s, 1919, the First World War, and then the Great Depression, many of the Ukrainians left the Appalachians looking for work elsewhere. Some go to Canada. However, a lot stayed behind. Literally tens of thousands of Western Ukrainians stayed in
Appalachia.
But they had an identity problem. Who were they? They themselves often didn't know exactly. When they arrived at Ellis Island in New York, they were often labeled Hungarians.
Коли вони прибували в Нью-Йорк, вони самі їх часом називали угорцями.
Or Austro-Hungarian.
Або Austro-Hungarian.
Or Poles.
Або поляками.
Or Slavs.
Або слов'янами.